Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. I am your host, Ben Jackson, and once again, I'm joined by Scott and Joris. Guys, how are you doing this evening?
Very well. Hope you are too, guys, and everyone at home. Another week closer to the final round of regular fixtures, and the excitement is rising.
I'm definitely doing better than a microphone stand. I hope that the listener will not hear anything of that. But yeah, my microphone stand just broke down right before recording. So if I sound a little different and a bit even worse than I usually do, yeah, well, there's a reason for that. I hope that we have that fixed by next week.
All complaints to Joris.
Yeah, exactly. Joris had his Nikola Jokic breaking the mic stand sort of moment. But we were worried that it was going to sound like he was in a submarine off the coast of Hamburg at one point. But hopefully it's clearer now and we can hear what he's saying about this weekend's action. A moving week, I guess we could call it, where different things are happening and people are kind of jostling into their positions for the final week of the season. Friday, Mechelen kept their kind of great run going. They beat Vestalo 3-1. Saturday lunched, afternoon kickoff, Antwerp beat Kortrijk 1-0. Charleroi drew 0-0 with Cercle Bruges. Molenbeek lost the Brussels derby by 3-0 to Anderlecht. Genk beat Standard Liège 1-0. Club Bruges beat Leuven 3-1. Union drew 1-1 with Gent. And Erpen scored and won a game. They beat Sint-Truiden 1-0. Let's start in Mechelen, the lovely town city of Mechelen. They just kept rolling. We got asked a question last week about Kieran Rabti. Is he one of the most underrated players in the Belgian Pro League? Apparently he is. He's now the side's top scorer after this one. Slimani involved in the first goal. Patrick Fluke got a start, obviously, with Bill Antonio out. His cross maybe found Rob Scoofs. I don't know if Scoofs found the ball himself rather than it being an actual kind of cross to Scoofs, but it's a great run from him. He brings it across, and Rabti kind of like feather touches it in. Slimani looked like he might have been able to get in touch, but Rabti claimed it to make it 1-0 within 10 minutes. He then got his second goal of the game just after 35 minutes. Patrick Fluke again involved. His ball across found Slimani. Slimani played it again across to Rabti. He tucked it home to make it 2-0. Scoring was complete in the second half. Fluke got himself a goal after some nice work from Nicola Storm. We mentioned him coming off the bench and being able to provide some impetus. He was able to do that. Fluke tapped in from Storm. He did well to kind of get the ball across. Vestalo didn't go home empty-handed. They did score a goal, and it's probably one of the most wasted screamers that's ever been scored. Jordan Boss with an absolute ridiculous goal into the top corner. Just it's probably one of those ones that we're going to forget because it had absolutely no bearing on the game whatsoever, but a fantastic goal from him. But what it means is Mechelen instantly put pressure on all the sides chasing the top six alongside them, and yeah, they just keep on rolling.
Yeah, there's no stopping them at the moment, really. That's their fourth straight win, undefeated in nine. They've won seven of those nine. Quite an incredible second half of the season, really. I don't think anyone saw that coming. We were all looking for an improvement, but didn't really see this coming. And they're now on the cusp of a playoff one spot. Will they achieve that? We'll see what happens this coming weekend. But if they do that, that'll be the first time they've ever done that. And this comes, we've got this backdrop, but there's a huge amount of speculation around Besnik Hasi's future at the moment. We know that the club are going to sit down with him, Tim Matthijs, the sporting director, and Frank Lagasse, the CEO, will meet with him after this weekend's final regular fixture. And you would imagine that if they do secure that historic playoff one spot, then he'll be in a very strong conversational position when that happens. But to add a bit more intrigue to all of that, of course, we know that Ghent are interested in Besnik's services, and also other clubs are kind of manoeuvring there as well. So this is one to kind of keep an eye on to see what will happen there. Decent performance from Mechelen, yet again, took their chances, actually, as they've been doing for a number of weeks. Ben mentioned Jordan Boss's banger of a goal right at the death, which he's right, we will all forget. It's such a shame the game was over at that point. You know, a real anti-climax for such a great goal. I thought Nicholas Madsen had a really decent game as well for Westerlo while we're talking about them. They are not completely safe yet. I think they're going to be okay. I don't really have any worries about them. It would be really cruel if something awful happened to them going into the final weekend. They're at home to Joris's side, Genk, who do require a win if they're going to get that playoff one spot. Mechelen also in their hunt for the playoff one spot are away to Leuven, and will be going for it all guns blazing, as will Leuven, hopefully, because they really need something to try and escape the drop.
Yeah, that goal, that might still prove important, of course, Jordan Bosse's goal, because of the goal differences that could be decisive at the end of next weekend between several sides. We'll see how that pans out. Also, already a flash forward to another game where a goal was ruled out for, well, that could have actually big impact that for like completely refereeing disaster again, but we'll talk about that a bit later again. But Mechelen in the fight, definitely, like you guys said it, until the end, thanks to four consecutive wins. Well, not only in the fight, they even have it all in their own hands. So, the best position they have ever been in. They never played, never played in playoff one, champion or champions playoffs or whatever it has been called over the years. So, they never reached it. They're now at the brink of it. Will they get there? Yeah, okay, stay tuned, I guess. What's remarkable about this all, I think, is still also like with Slimani's situation. Like last year, he came in at Anderlecht and he produced a lot of goals. It was not only the goals, that there was also, of course, his the importance the all-around play he got and like being a target, well, somehow kind of target man, I guess, a pivot anyway to that you could play around, and now he's still doing that and he's so important for Mechelen, but that somehow he didn't reach the net. Also with that first goal, Mrapti probably stole the goal from him, or else stole. If Mrapti didn't touch that probably would have been Slimani's goal anyway, definitely crucial. And like Scott said, Rob Schoofs also said, like, well, we didn't even expect anything out of this. Around New Year's, we were still talking about, well, relegation and avoiding relegation. And now, well, I think no one ever expected this run of form from Mechelen. Well, I believe probably I didn't look this up, but I'm quite certain that they're the best side in 2024 altogether out of all 16 now. Yeah, for Westerlo, looks like they might just have to edge it. And also starting to feel, okay, this one will definitely backfire since their next fixture is indeed against Genk, but they might just edge it based on two good months in December and January, the rest of the season has not really been good. The last few weeks, it's not that they're necessarily playing all that bad all the time, but yeah, you could see specifically Vermaand being out has hampered them a bit. He was back in the game against Mechelen in the second half, which was also their better half in this game. And they might have, well, it looked like they might even get into the game till, of course, their sucker punch game still. Also three losses in a row now. Despite Bosse's stunner, which might or not might not have huge implications by next week.
Yeah, so if Leuven win next week, they'll go level. If Westerlo lose as well, level on wins, it'll then be down to goal difference, which Westerlo do have a better one at the moment. But obviously, if those results happen, the goal difference could very, very easily change.
If I'm not mistaken, it's even only two goals difference. So like if Westerlo lose and Leuven win, it's already, well, equal. that's how close it is.
It's going to get messy, isn't it? I agree on Vermaand as well. It feels like they should probably try and get him in next year because it's not going well so far for them without him. And it's slightly concerning going into January. You don't want to be the team that's kind of sliding into the end of the season because usually it doesn't pick up again on the other side. One side that gave themselves a lifeline last weekend was Kortrijk. They welcomed Antwerp to Kortrijk and a kind of like a free hit, I guess, in that sense. I mean, I know Kortrijk obviously need the points, but they at least kept themselves in and around it and they were the chance. It was kind of, they had to win those other games and they did. Antwerp obviously needed a win to ensure they would be in the Champions playoffs. They managed to do that. George Ilenekina finishing a Duque with another assist. Lovely finish from what the Dutch commentators just calling him George now. I think they just can't be bothered to say the rest of his name, just in fear of getting it wrong. Could have been a lot more for Antwerp in this one. They finished like 15 shots, only 5 on target, 70% of the ball. Unfortunately for Kortrijk, only losing 1-0 would probably be a little bit more frustration, not being able to at least kind of, they could have potentially snuck a point by just hanging around in the game, but they weren't able to do that. Antwerp make Champions playoffs. I've already seen people talking about them winning the league. Apparently they haven't given up on winning the league. Not sure how that's going to happen, but yeah, big win for them. For Kortrijk, slight frustration that they couldn't just follow up last weekend's win with at least another point or something, just to keep the pressure on those other sides around them.
Yeah, well, Kortrijk couldn't really create anything this weekend. I don't think they played badly. They actually did very well to kind of hang in the game and to try and contain Antwerp and try to exploit some breaks that they had, which they kind of couldn't really. And Antwerp's quality really won through in the end. They kind of wore them down. Ben's right, they probably should have had more than the one goal that they did. But I always felt the first goal in this game was going to be really, really important. And I did think that if Antwerp got it, then it was going to be very, very difficult for Kortrijk, because we know have been struggling to score. There have been some improvements recently, but they were going to need to score first here, I think, to really get anything. Another shout out for Chidera Aduke. We don't need to say too much more about him. We've been waxing lyrical about him what feels like for at least 3 or 4 weeks now. Really decent game from him again this weekend. Alhassan Youssef had a really good game as well. And Antwerp, I thought, played at quite a good level. They were quite pleased with this win, I think. You know, there were some nice scenes between the fans and the playing staff and the coaching staff after the game, and you could see what that meant to them to kind of secure that playoff one spot, which is important. Because I think, I don't know how you guys feel, but they've had a slightly disappointing season in some respects. Lots of reasons for that, of course, which we won't go into here. But that's kind of how I feel about their season. So it'll be interesting to see how the playoffs do go for them. Kortrijk now have got, in their final game, Anderlecht away in Brussels, and I suppose they're kind of hoping that Brian Reimer might rotate a little bit and rest some of those players who are on the edge of a suspension, but the way they're playing at the moment, I'm not sure that's going to make too much of a difference.
Yeah, Kortrijk, offensively, really, just no power. Just one shot on target. Although, famously, there was that, well, I already talked about this in the chat. There was a very, 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 very bad shot from Avenatti in the first half that Bite got. And still, after that, their XG seemed to be completely nil. Nil point, nil, 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 whatever, how many nils you want to put. Yes, the shot was bad, but still, it was on targets. And I guess that stat was just not completely correct, so I'm wondering if that was the one shot or if there was something else nonetheless that was hopefully a bit more dangerous. Just in total, their expected goals was 0.12. Again, might not be completely correct, but it's, well, indicative of anyway of how bad they were there. And I guess I might have to correct myself here quickly. I think last week I said they might go into the playdowns with not having the worst attack nor worst defense. I think worst defense, things will have to go really weird if they will still pick up that. Questionable honor. But worst attack, it looks like they actually might get into these playoffs with the worst attack, which is not a complete surprise. Given what I said before here already as well. Antwerp, on the other hand, they actually, more or less in this specific game, the same issue, but not the same. Just they can't be happy completely with the offensive output. With the offensive part itself, yes, but only scoring one goal. Actually, somehow one goal that would have come out of nowhere from Kortrijk could have turned the game around still. That's the only thing they can blame themselves for. Yeah, their expected goals were also only around what a penalty would bring you as well. But now they're certain of the Champions playoffs, and things they will only be looking up from now on, and rightfully so. But let's see if they actually can move up indeed.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, I didn't expect them to win the league again this season, just based on that having to balance European football again and stuff like that and kind of do all that. But they've kind of got a little bit going, but I agree, like, they'll be frustrated that they couldn't really finish things off properly in this game and kind of show some more attacking clout. We didn't see any
on their season. I guess many things could hinge as well. So whether they win the cup or not, the trophy always makes it, gives it a bit more shine.
Exactly.
Figuratively.
Back-to-back domestic cups. I mean, that's always a nice thing to hang on the old CV for Mark Van Bommel as he goes into the summer and potentially looks for new jobs. Who knows? There are rumours that this might be his last. One man who... There was a slightly clickbait headline that I think was just bad English translation that says Felice Mazzo is resigning. But it's more that the actual article read that something that he was so tired that he felt like he's been managing for one season for 10 years. This season, they felt like it's been going on for 10 years or something. So I think it was just a weird kind of language translation. But I was like, he's resigned before the end of the season, but he's still there.
That's so funny, isn't it, guys? Because that's what it feels like to watch Charleroi this season. So if that's what it feels like to be on the inside, then, you know, I can sympathize with that because it's not any better.
Why are you in there?
So they welcomed Cercle Bruges, both sides obviously needing a win. Reasonably kind of even cagey game, I guess, to begin with. Cercle did have a little bit more of kind of the ball and the momentum in the first half, but everything changes with a long ball over the top. Popovic is adjudged to have fouled, I think it was Yusuf Badji, who got a rare kind of random start, but I think that kind of suggests that Mazu is just searching for someone to find the back of the net. Popovic brings him down, he's sent off. Cercle aren't very happy about this. I've not been able to read their kind of release, so I haven't actually seen what angle they're taking on why they're unhappy about it. But Popovic is given a straight red, even though the referee is called over to the VAR, but he sticks with his original decision. So basically, then into the second half, obviously, Charleroi have all the ball and the kind of possession. And you think, even a side that can't score, maybe they can go on to do it against 10 men. They can't. They do have a very good chance to do that from the penalty spot. Marco Ilamalic steps up, but Varlason makes the save. Not the best of penalties from Marco Ilamalic either. He had actually hit the bar in the first half from a free kick. Just very reminiscent, very random memory from me, but very reminiscent of his goal for Madagascar at AFCON a couple of years ago. A very, very similar strike. That one snuck in. This one, unfortunately for him, didn't. Cercle Bruges are able to hold on to get the point. For Charleroi, they're in exactly the same situation as Veselo in the sense that if they lose against Ghent next weekend and Leuven win, they get their level on points. The only bad thing for Charleroi is that their goal difference is already worse than Leuven. So Leuven don't even need to win particularly big, which in a way that kind of gives an extra point to Veselo, doesn't it? Like Veselo have this kind of Charleroi-shaped buffer, a big zebra-shaped buffer in between the two. And yeah, it'd be interesting because that's two kind of sides that are struggling at the moment in terms of scoring and collecting results and Ghent and Charleroi are going together. But for Cercle, it's just, I think it's frustration, isn't it, guys? Because with 11 men on the pitch, they'd probably have backed themselves to win that game eventually. But the moment they went down to 10 men, I think it was always going to be a struggle for them to kind of win that one off that and could potentially cost them in that race for the top six.
Yeah, well, let's tackle the red card straight away, shall we, seeing as it's one of, in a way, one of the moments of the weekend. I personally agree with Cercle's position. I think the referee says the handball's accidental, which is why, you know, why it goes as far as the penalty being called as the action progresses. But actually, it should have been stopped at that point. It's a handball. And actually, this is, I think, where Cercle's real frustration comes in. At the moment, the way the rules are applied, it's a bit like we see with VAR and handballs and penalties almost every week. Intent is almost completely irrelevant, even in interpretation terms now. A lot of the time, if it touches the hand, everyone's looking for it. And more often than not, it's given, whether at the time or not. And in this case, I felt the referee's probably right. I think it is accidental. I do actually agree with him there. But, you know, it's a handball, so it should have been pulled back, I think. So I do agree with the way that they've applied the rules there. We know nothing's going to happen, but coming out and saying it, I suppose, is that's just what happens now. This game summed up Charleroi's entire season in so many ways. I thought they were going to miss the penalty, and sure enough, that's what happened. This is just a side that just really, really struggled to score. We know that. I mean, they've only scored three in their last seven. I want to give out another shout out at this risk of sounding like a broken record. Jeremy Patrice, yet again, probably their best player, certainly in terms of his consistency as well. You know, I want to say something positive about them at the moment. Cercle, on the other hand, will be slightly disappointed, I think, because of the red card initially, because obviously that changes games somewhat. But I think they probably felt coming into this was definitely a winnable game for them. That makes it more difficult, especially because of the way they play their game, their own natural game. A couple of shout-outs. Abu Francis, pretty decent. It's good to see him back to doing what he does best. And Flavio Nazinho, I thought had a pretty decent game as well. They go into the final weekend at home, Cercle this is, to Molenbeek, who are in absolute free fall at the moment. So Cercle and Miron Muzlic will really fancy their chances there and just hope that some other results go their way.
On the handball... I am actually very, very happy that that is not given, but yes, the rules are clear, it should be, but I have a problem with those rules, and specifically in cases like this, like, I mean, this guy has no idea that his ball is coming, like, he doesn't even look at the ball, and it hits him, yeah, okay, and then, yeah, of course, yes, like I said, I'm happy it's not given, but I can also completely understand that there's actually one rule where it's quite clear now that almost always is given and actually should be always. Whether I agree with that rule or not, well, no, but yeah, it is the rule and it's like quite consequently taken and now even you know, those things now go wrong. Yeah, well, time to revise those rules, but well, that's what I would say for that. Who am I? But yeah, yeah, Scott already mentioned 3 goals in 7. He went even further than I had written down 2 goals in the last 4. Well, 3 in 7 is even worse indeed. No, wait, it's even 2 goals in total in their last 4 games. Never mind, that's including their opponents. one for and one against. So that's how exciting. That's coming back to how exciting their season has been indeed. It was... also, that's quite remarkable. It was the first penalty that went against Cercle Brugge this season. And, well, it's not that we're at match day one now, so that's quite remarkable. And, yeah, of course, obviously, still no goals conceded. Although I have to admit, Magelsson clearly was off his line as well there. So if we start complaining about litter of the law, yeah, that's another topic as well. And for Cercle, yeah, also a rare draw. Only Eupen has less draws. Yeah, enough to stay in the playoff race. But also the first time they didn't score a goal in 2024. And they probably should have scored that goal in stoppage time. Lopez da Silva should have scored that one. And there would be no talk about any handball either anymore, I think. Well, way less at least. And definitely no statement. But yeah.
Not the player you'd really like. I love Lopez. I think he's a very, very good player, but he's not the one he wanted on the end of that. He wanted Kev. Unfortunately, he was the one providing the cross, I think, wasn't he? So it couldn't quite be the other way around. Yeah.
I don't think it was. That's a lot of topic. I think he went for the first post in Balvin.
He missed it. Yeah. Anyway,
it doesn't matter too much, but yes.
Yeah. Didn't change a thing. One side that didn't score this weekend, another side did score in the Brussels derby. And I think biggest alarm bells that you could kind of like start ringing if you're an RWDM fan is after the game, Bruno Ehlers was like, I don't think we really got the idea of the derby. And I don't think I could really explain that to the players. And we didn't really understand the derby. And I was like... you can't say that, like, seriously, man. Like, and it kind of, for me, it rings this bell of like, you don't want to say it, and it's kind of like you don't feel like you can say it, but you just feel like, I don't feel like this team really cares about the club. But I'm like, I'm sure that's not true. But then for him to come out and say that, I'm like, no, I don't think they do really care, do they? Like, if, and it was very, very obvious that they didn't care, and it was very, very obvious that Anderlecht were like, well, we don't even need to get out of second gear. I don't think they just had to like put the handbrake down and just kind of roll through Molenbeek because it was so easy. So Vertonghen scores after 10 minutes, just awful, awful defending from Molenbeek. They then try and play out 8 minutes later, just give the ball straight to Anders Dreyer. He just runs into the little bit of space and smashes it into the corner. Absolutely nothing Tia De Forni could do about that one. That was an absolute screamer from him. Vertonghen's then fouled in the box by Souza. He stands up and is like, it's not a foul. I thought it was a foul. Scott thinks it was a foul. Vertonghen didn't think it was a foul. Like, yeah, it probably was quite soft, but every time I watched it, I was like, this looks like a foul. Like, it looks just as clumsy defending coming through the back of someone. Like, I can see where the referee's like, it looks like a penalty to me. Like, you can say it's not. But he's like, well, we may as well just kill the game now while we can. So I think the referee was just like, let's put everyone out of their misery. Let's not kind of keep this close or keep it thinking that maybe there's a chance here. So upstairs still. But I did wonder whether Vertonghen was like, I'm going to take it and I'm just going to smash it into the stands. But Dahlberg was like, I'm going to take it and I'm just going to stick it in the back of the net. Which is what he did. And that's pretty much it. That's kind of the end of the game, basically. I was like, well, I can switch this off and I can go do something else with my life because Molenbeek aren't going to do anything. And they didn't. They did have, like, apparently they had 10 shots. I can't remember that. Whereas Anderlecht had, like, 11 XG of, like, 2.48. Obviously helped by the penalty. But, no, this game, after Vertonghen scored in the 10th minute, I thought there's just no... I had no kind of... at all kind of idea that Molenbeek were ever going to get back into this. They were just poor in every single position on the pitch. Like, even Bjorn, who's been pretty decent recently, couldn't really do much in this one. It was quite possibly the easiest game I think Anderlecht have played all season. And it's a Brussels derby. Like, that's pretty poor kind of reflection on Molenbeek's players and Molenbeek's management that they weren't up for this one at all.
Well, when I was watching it, I said this to you guys when we were chatting about it. I said that this could be as many as Anderlecht want. If they really want to go to town here, they could. It had that written all over it, and especially in the early stages. I was surprised by how poor Molenbeek were. I mean, we know how bad they've been for a while now, but this weekend they were absolutely woeful. Really, really woeful. And they do look like a side who, to me, have just kind of chucked it now. You know, Ben's alluding to some of the reasons as why that might be. I mean, he's right. I mean, Bruno Erles saying something like that publicly is not only not advisable, it's actually just daft as well. And it strikes me that that's the sort of thing that a man who knows he's not going to be there very long would say as well. Real frustration. Anderlecht just rampant because Molenbeek made it so easy for them. And as I was saying, they could have had a lot more. Dreyer was again very good, as he has been for, you know, significant chunks of the season. Admittedly, it was made very easy for him. A player of that quality is always going to eat you up like that. But the big takeaway really is Anderlecht narrowing the gap, I suppose. You know, we've been asking for a few weeks, would Anderlecht go into the playoffs with the gap being narrowed? And we know it's already been narrowed slightly as a result of this result and Union dropping points this weekend. The only other question is, you know, will it be narrowed even further in the final weekend? Anderlecht have a very lip-smackingly nice, from their point of view, home tie against Kortrijk in the final round. So they will really fancy themselves. Union, of course, have a slightly harder away tie at the Bossel, so it could get a little bit spicier yet again this coming weekend.
Yeah, Molenbeek here really showing why they are the worst defense. Maybe what Scott said also could have been turned around. Is Molenbeek, Anderlecht could score as many as Molenbeek wants to give them. I guess. So it's, yeah, of course, I don't want to take anything away from Anderlecht. Their finishes were great, but yeah, conceding another penalty as well, Molenbeek, whether it is one or not, well. I'm still a bit sitting on the fence. I will assume that the VAR saw enough images to see if the ball get touched first or Vertonghen's foot, or Vertonghen. I don't even know if it was his foot, but yeah. But even then, yeah, it's a bit light. But anyway, you could give it. But that then also the second one was a gift, despite the really good finish from Dreyer. But yeah, just. The terrible defending. Yeah, the Fruini actually could do better, I think, Ben. Not on saving, but on playing out from the back. Yeah, that to allow Anderlecht the ball. Well, it was more the defender's fault, I guess, but nonetheless, he also paid for it with a substitute at halftime or even in the first half, I don't remember. And well, the first one there was just no defending, I guess. So yeah, that doesn't help. also secures them to be playing the relegation playoffs now. I'm sure they will really like that fact. But yeah, that also comes to no surprise. And yeah, Scott mentioned Dreyer as a having a decent season. I'm never going to become the biggest of fan of his, but yeah, well, he is the most, has the most goal involvements in the whole league now with 15 goals and 8 assists. Denki, of course, has 22 goals, but he has no assists. So yeah, that's he tops him now. So yeah, his efficiency is really great, and of course, that does help a team. And yeah, and in a team that good, that is going well as well. I still feel like he might not be the one carrying your team over when you're in a slump, but in a well-oiled machine like Anderlecht the moment are, yeah, he will provide you even more with assists and with assists and goals, which he either otherwise also still could, but yeah, then more out of nowhere. Now he's a bit more present in the game as well. And yeah, I wrote it down already before, but yeah, Anderlecht indeed, before Union played, so... But Anderlecht, yeah, one thing to put, we're also talking about it already now. They're finally playing on Saturday before Union, so they are the one that could put pressure on them and to see how they could cope with it. And, well, Anderlecht did put that pressure on. Well, whether Union coped with it or not, it's difficult to say because of all the fixtures, it's different. But, yeah, definitely, yeah, they dropped some points there. Psychologically, that could have an impact, of course. And also... Yeah, we'll talk a bit more about that. Psychology can play a role later on, I guess, in this episode when we're talking about Union.
Yes, no, we will definitely get to them soon. And just to kind of quickly go back to Molenbeek, this is kind of just it. It felt like this was the inevitable, like kind of end to their season in the summer, like when Texter was doing all his kind of like get rid of Evouard. And then kind of becoming the president and like messing around in the scenes, back scenes and all that sort of stuff. And I think for me, kind of one of the biggest kind of like kind of cognitive things for me as into why I feel like, I don't know, maybe I kind of don't really rate the team that much. It's like I look through their squad and I feel like I don't really know their players still after a year. Like there's so many players in that team that I'm like, I don't really know what you do, like what you're good at. Like there's like obvious players that have maybe been around a bit that we do know, but there's a lot of players in that team that you're like, I don't really know you very well, like at the end of this season. And it's weird because I feel like Vessel obviously came up last year, but we could probably go through that squad and like we could quite confidently say what these players do. Whereas I feel like we could go for the Molenbeek team and be like, I don't really know like what they are really as a team. And I think that it shows on the pitch. I don't think that's just kind of us. Let's move on to Genk against Standard Liège. Obviously, Mechelen's win, Cercle's draw. Genk was a good chance to kind of put a little bit of space in between and kind of jump into that top six. They did manage to do that. Unfortunately, it came at the cost of Luca Oyen, another really bad injury to him. Just as you feel like the space is opening up for him to kind of have a lot more game time with Paintsil gone, and others as well, it just feels like, oh, this was going to be the chance for him. And it's just so frustrating. However, it did then offer the opportunity to someone else. And Anwar Ait El Hadj, remember him? Feels like we haven't spoken about him for a lot. He's been on the bench a lot for Vranken side, but doesn't really get the game time. He comes on in at halftime. Had to be an ex-Anderlecht player sticking one in against Standard Liège, didn't it? Shot from El Khadis on the edge of the box. Bodart just pushes it straight back into the danger zone. Pretty poor from him. El Hadj is on hand to tuck it into the back of the net. Bodart's angry at someone. I don't know who he's angry at. Didn't like he was angry at himself. But yeah, it finishes 1-0 to Genk. They could have had a lot more goals in this one. They had plenty of chances to put some in the back of the net, but they didn't. But nice to see El Hadj getting on the score sheet. Nice to see him kind of back, and hopefully, again, while Oyen's injury is frustrating, maybe it will give El Hadj some opportunities at the end of the season to kind of show what he can do, show to Franken that maybe he does deserve some more game time than he's been getting. For Standard, they're safe. They're kind of were one of the only teams, apart from maybe St. Truiden, that just had kind of absolutely nothing riding on this weekend. And they can, in brackets, look forward to the summer and kind of what might happen. They just got to kind of go through the playoffs, but I don't feel as much for them to look forward to, really. But for Genk, at least they're in the top six now, and it's in their hands, I guess, yours to stay there.
Yeah, they maneuvered themselves in an okay position going into that. Like Michele, also have it in their own hands, which is not a bad feat, of course. But yeah, I've been too disappointed with the whole with Genk in important games in the over the course of the last 9 months. Yeah, so I wouldn't put my bet on it either. Anyway, but yeah, Oye. Yeah, through two ACL injuries in two consecutive seasons, it's not uncommon apparently as well. I guess it all in a way makes sense. The one leg that does well. Of course, things are balanced in your recovery, but yeah, you probably over-recover some points or. Is something in your body is like that, so you're still susceptible to get the same injury on the other side. Apparently, it is a thing, around 12% chance, if I read that correctly, that has happened. So it's still a slim chance, relatively, but yeah, big enough. And we'll see how he will recover from that. Aitel Hatch actually didn't come on for him even specifically. It was Sor who stayed also with an injury at halftime in the dressing room. But glad to see him on the score sheet indeed. And well, really, yeah, overshadowing Genk's performance, I think, actually, because they were playing quite well, specifically the first half. Second half was, even though they did manage to make the difference there, but what was worse. Definitely after they scored, they also didn't create that much anymore. But yeah, definitely one of the better halves of Genk this season against a very poor Standard. I have to say that as well. The one doesn't go without the other. They were just nowhere. Only showing sometimes, well, a bit similar to Antwerp in Kortrijk. Genk should have killed the game. And Genk also gave away a few chances at the end of both halves as well, which, yeah, could have cost them. Luckily, that did not, for me at least, that did not happen. But, and for Standard, on the other hand, yeah, third consecutive loss in Genk as well in that fixture. That's a stat. And while it was a bit strange to see them celebrating more or less after defeat, because they were, well, at that point actually they were not completely safe yet officially, but that they needed to wait one more game for that, but they were celebrating after a loss. It's still a bit of a weird thing, but given the season they had and what was most likely going to be the outcome of that game that was to come, I guess, it's still strange. However, my head spins about it. Like, since they were not on 100% safe at that point yet, strange. But, well, in the end, they are going to be in the league next season. That's the main message for them, I guess.
Yeah, I think Joris is right to highlight that. That's a really odd thing to kind of witness, and not a good thing. You know that straight away. You know, that must have been, Standard fans are very frustrated anyway for a whole host of reasons that we could do a separate podcast on probably. But that can't have been very nice to see at all, and sums up a lot about what's going on inside that group, I think. Standard exceptionally poor yet again.
Well, admittedly, it was with the fans they did that, so I'm actually not completely. I feel like there's not enough frustration with the fans. I know sometimes it comes out, and then it's comes out in a bad way. But often it also it's a bit, not as frustrating as they should be at this point.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that, isn't it, Joris? Because it's one thing holding up a banner saying 7-7 out. It's another thing taking kind of more direct action than that. When I say action, I don't mean interrupting games, because that doesn't get anybody anywhere. Yeah, I think that's the big question for the Standard fan base. What, if anything, can they do now to up the ante on the owners? Because I think most of them have decided now that, they need change again. It's an interesting one, that, and just as an indication of quite how poor they were, yet again, Lifus was probably their best player again this weekend. Something that, when I said this, I think it was last week or the week before, never thought I would be saying, a player who's not been in favour really up until very recently, yet again probably their best player. Just a wee word on Luca Oyen. From my point of view, I'm really, really gutted for Luca Oyen. I remember at the start of last season, I was asked by quite a few people who might be the next big thing in Belgium, and I've always felt that he was one of two or three players who could be the next massive thing to come out of Belgium. And of course, he gets the initial ACL, which, you know, puts all of that on the back burner, and now it's happened again. And I wish him well, because he's looking at round about 8 months out, so we're not going to see him until well into next season now. Outrageously talented footballer who I just really hope, and I'm crossing my fingers and my toes, that that's him had his entire career's worth of injuries in those two shockers, because he's somebody I would really like to see come really good, because he's got everything to do that. So fingers crossed, and get well soon, Luca.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Just one thing quickly before we move on the kind of standard Liège fan frustration. I guess they can't really take it out on the players, because if you look at it, there's probably only at least seven of the people that started probably aren't going to be there next season anyway. I mean, you could probably make an argument that probably all of them might not be there next season, because you could probably look through that squad and think who might be sold and who's going back to their club and who is out of contract but will not want to come back. Apart from Lifus, remember? He loves hanging around.
Well, Fergal Harkin is unquestionably, guys, going to be the busiest technical director in the Pro League this summer. No doubt about it. Complete rebuild. And, you know, no money to work with either. So, you know, good luck, Fergal.
Yeah. Busy, but maybe not getting things through the door. He's probably going to have a very long list and have to work his way down it quite a lot of times before he lands on a player that's actually going to be able to come into the club. So, yeah, frustrating for them. Frustration in Bruges, that is for sure, with club fans after another pretty dismal performance, this time in Europe against Molde. The side were, they should have won, like, let's be fair, like, even not just on paper, but in terms of like the squad that they put out should have been able to beat Molde. They did make Molde look pretty decent at times. Molde scoring just before half time. Club did get a penalty, which they definitely deserved. I think there definitely was a penalty from memory. Maxime de Kuyper stepped up, put that one in, and you thought, okay, just get out of there with a point and you'll be fine. But got absolutely caught at the end, which will not have done Ronnie Dyler any service, because this man just seems to be conceding in the 90-plus minutes at the moment. So they leave Molde 2-1 down. Still think they should win at home, like they should be strong enough at home, but it's just the way things are turning out at the moment. You're just like, oh, do we trust them to do that? Wouldn't have been feeling any better in the dugout or in the crowd when Edward Platinx gave Leuven the lead from a corner. Tor Steinsen back in, Platinx puts it in, pretty decent header from him. But then Leysen decides to gift club a goal, just absolutely clangs it into his own goal. We think he may have one of the lowest ratings we've ever seen on football for a player that's played for 90 minutes. He ends this one with 3.4. Not great from the young goalkeeper, who on the whole has been pretty decent this season. But it's kind of when you don't want it to cost you, it starts to cost you. Interesting, Dyler went for a similar substitution as he did during the week in bringing on Kiliana Saba on at half time. This time he did actually take Odoi off. I thought he was going to take Odoi off in the European game, but he didn't. He just kept him on. This time he did actually take him off when he got booked. Van Aken then scores from a free kick to make it 2-1 just after an hour. Boulmeier then scores pretty shortly after that to make it 3-1. Frustrating, I guess, for Leuven in the sense that if they could have held out to at least half time being in the lead, maybe the frustration within club could have given them a few more chances on the break to get more goals. Unfortunately, club did kind of turn it on a little bit and actually put some of the chances they had away, but they were very grateful to the goalkeeper for that. Means they secured their Champions playoff spot as well. Don't know if it eases any pressure on Dyler. I feel like this was one of the results. It's kind of like a lose-lose situation. Like, he had to win, but even if he didn't, if he did win, it didn't really change anything. They have to beat Molde during the week, I think. I think that's pretty vital for him. I think you can't afford to lose a game like that, which you should definitely win.
Yeah, well, I think the overall performance, as Ben was saying, wasn't good enough to relieve any pressure. So the fact it's a win will be all Ronnie Dyla's concerned with at the moment. I thought they were reasonably poor in the first half, actually. They were much better in the second half, but the first half, they just, you know, they weren't good at all. Leuven were able to take advantage of that. And Oscar Garcia commenting afterwards, he felt that it was the second goal really killed them. That was the one that sucked the game away from them. And they're kind of quite disappointed, I think, with the way the second half went for them, understandably. Skov Olsen was pretty good this weekend, as was Bjorn Meyer, not a player I'm a massive fan of. I would file him underrated, personally. That's my view there. But he was good this weekend. Toby Lason, who we have been pretty complimentary about for a wee while now, having an absolute nightmare this weekend. A season's worth of mistakes, really, in one game there for him. Just an embarrassing performance, and he'll be really frustrated with that, I think. He just has to put it behind himself and kind of get on with it, because he has been good. He really has, and I'm sure that's what he was told afterwards. Look, you know, just get it out of your system. John Thorsteinsson, Ben mentioned, who's been in and out the side a little bit, probably shouldn't have, because he's been one of the better players all season, yet again showing that again. One of Leuven's better players, still. Not sure what's going on there with Garcia, whether all of those selection choices are entirely tactical, or whether the two get on, what's happening there, which is interesting, because he's been quite important for them this season in terms of his consistency as well. Leuven going to the final weekend, as we know, at home to Mechelen, and it all comes down to that. They need to win. They need to win well for their own sake, and hope some other things go their way. And you know, on the balance of the way things have been going up till now this season, you wouldn't think that's going to happen for them, I have to say. But both these sides are going to be going at it. They're going to have to, because they both get something to play for. So there could be a lot of goals in this one.
Yeah, and here is that that goal, that 4-1 goal from Jutglad that completely wrongly got ruled out, which could have major implications as well if, that would have put given Westerlo more of an edge and a bit more room in terms of goal difference. Of course, in case Leuven win, which they probably played their best game in a while, to be honest. They probably could have gone up even more, or at least stayed up until halftime. Until Dessa decided to hit the ball himself in the goal, because that was just a terrible cross from Heyer, actually. But or maybe not necessarily terrible. There was not really someone to play it for, but would have gone nowhere. That doesn't help. Offensively also, still they should have done more. There was a big chance from Braut Brunes to give them the lead again right in the beginning of the second half still, albeit there might have been an offside from Thorsteinsson before. I'm not completely sure there, since it was no goal. No lines were drawn, so maybe that would not have counted anyway. But they were both up front and at the defense again. Yeah, their pain points still stay the same, but in between they played some of their better football of the season. Let's put it that way, I guess. And one win still might be enough to save them. That's the thing. And there is only one game to play, of course. And I didn't think it would come against Kluivert, to be honest, despite Kluivert being not in the best of forms in general. But yeah, once they actually played quite well and they got that lead. Yeah, there was a slight chance, maybe, but Lassen unfortunately decided differently for them. I'm sorry to say that about him, because he indeed had a good season so far, but won them some points. I guess ultimately maybe he didn't win them that many points, because they often lost still. But yeah, nonetheless, can't put it all on him. For Club Brugge, not that much to say anymore. I guess they secured their spots, but not in the best fashion either. And indeed, well, I don't think this game will have many implications on Dyla. their last position, Europe will be more important.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. Another side who were in European action during the week were Union. They hosted Fenerbahce. We said it was a tough game. It was definitely a tough game. It was, like, I think we mentioned last week, didn't we, that Turkish football is a lot in a much better place than it's been for a number of years. And I just looked at that Fenerbahce squad and I was like, we've seen this before with Turkish teams where they have these incredible teams, but they don't really play very good football. Like, these players, it doesn't seem to, it's like a mismatch. But I thought this team were very good. And I think I said to Scott before we recorded, I felt like they were one of the few teams that really understood who they were playing. They knew they were going up against Union. They kind of knew what Union were about, and they were better, I think. And it's the first time in a very long time, I think, I've seen Union completely outplayed and kind of just not really in the game at all. Like, it really felt like what I think people who don't watch Belgian football maybe actually think of the league when they come up against the Belgian side in Europe. They think, well, we should just completely outplay this side because it's not very good. Whereas Union are a very good team, but I thought that Fenerbahce were really, really good and I was very impressed with them. So 3-0 that one finished in the first leg. I think based on this game against Ghent, we kind of hope that if you're a Union fan, I think you'd probably want them to just go there and put out a younger reserve team and just completely rotate the squad and keep players fit, because there's a lot of chatter now that this side maybe is looking a little bit tired. They've played so many games. They've played very high intensity games. Maybe they're just burning out a little bit and maybe they should be rested. But we know that Union don't really give up, and even 3-0, I don't feel like they're sat there thinking the tie's over, even though I think Blessing did kind of say something along those lines. But I don't know, I feel like that team doesn't give up. So maybe they'll shock and surprise, but go to Turkey and overturn a 3-0 lead against this Fenerbahce side. Sorry, it seems like a pretty tall order. They hosted Ghent at the Stade Yusuf Marien on the weekend. 0-0 in the first half, both sides with a couple of chances each. Ghent then did take the lead through Peter Gerkens, who, I don't know, I feel like he's scoring like loads at the moment, but then I look at his stats and he's not actually scoring that many, but I feel like he just, whenever I'm maybe noticing, he seems to be the one popping up with goals. So he scored to make it 1-0 to Ghent. Of course, Alessio Castromontes had to be the one to score at the other end. Kind of bundles in a header, doesn't celebrate, just picks up the ball and runs back. Neither side could force a winner in this one. Union did finish with a pretty decent XG of like 1.49. 18 shots, 5 of which were on target. On another day, maybe they do sneak one. But as we've said, this now means the gap to Anderlecht is just down to 6 points going into next weekend's fixtures. So it's getting tight. And it'll be interesting to see if the tightness of this is going to influence their kind of team selection in the European competition.
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? Ben just used the phrase there, on another day, and that kind of sums up this game. Union were decent, I thought, and most of the time would have got something or more than what they did get out of this game, with most games, I think. But it didn't happen this weekend, which is interesting. And, you know, Ben alluding to their heavy schedule, the European games, is that impacting now? We don't know. It's a wee bit too early to tell yet. But there is another club on the other side of Brussels who obviously have been drinking all of this in. And this has obviously been feeding them a little bit, because, you know, you're getting to that crucial point of the season and you see, you know, your main title challengers at this stage kind of dropping some points, which doesn't happen very often, admittedly, hasn't this season, is quite big psychologically, as Joris was alluding to earlier. Kind of funny to me that Alessio Castromontes had such a good game against his former side, happens so often, sticking it to his former T1 as well, who was quite public about not really fancying him, which is why he left him out so often as well. So I think on a personal level, that was probably quite nice, handled it as you would have expected, you know, no exuberant celebrations, very professional about it. I thought Julien Desart proved yet again how important he is for the Buffaloes this weekend. Really important player, a bit like Sven Coombs, who has just had his contract extended just this evening, confirmation of that. And I think the big thing to take away really from Ghent's perspective is they're now struggling big time for playoff one, big time. We said a while ago we felt they might be the side who would miss out. It's looking very likely that they will be the ones now, although they're still in that mix. They have Charleroi at home in the final round of fixtures, so we'll see what happens there. But yeah, things have got a little bit spicier at the top this weekend.
Yeah, and interestingly, like, I found that Ghent are the ones that on most days would have won this game. If Tissoudali would have had any of his old form, he missed two really big chances at 0-0. Yeah, one-on-ones even. That really... Yeah, I think Van Hazenbroek also felt that way, to be honest. But that probably 12. I'm not sure if that's someone I want to be related to too much either at the moment. it's been a big show lately. But interestingly, these have been the first points taken from Union after a European game that they played. So that's not a stat you see that often. The fatigue excuse gets more often used earlier in the season already. Well, excuse or like the explanation. But now this time it was very publicly Blessing coming out with it himself, saying that that these players are starting to feel it. And that's where the psychology indeed comes into play. I'm not sure. I guess everyone knows that anyway, but like it will definitely will give Ed's, for his own dressing room, could have some effect, maybe it doesn't, but in that case it still will have a positive effect, I think, to other dressing rooms, especially the Anderlecht's one, hearing about that, since, well, Anderlecht obviously have had a less busy schedule than Union, being earlier, not that early, but still earlier out of the cup, and, well, not having European football as well. Some players will be rested anyway. Amoura is suspended for both in Europe as in the game against Antwerp. His level has in the last month, let's say, maybe a bit less, has also dropped. So maybe he would actually benefit from that small break. I think that's these two games, and then there's an international break where he might get a call up, I guess, but nonetheless, it's a less busy period of time. For sure. They indeed have to go to the Basel. Antwerp haven't lost a game at the Basel still, so taking that into consideration, it very well might be that the gap decreases a bit more, which would put a bit more pressure on them already before the playoffs. And again, psychology could come into play. We'll see if a third time is a charm for them this time. For Ghent, just like I said, they actually didn't make enough out of their chances. And like Scott mentioned already, they not only need to win themselves, but need a few pieces to fall their way this weekend to still reach the playoffs, which it's definitely not over yet. But they have made it very difficult for themselves. And it was also the third consecutive 1-1 between those two sides. So for the betting people around us, if this fixture would come up in the playoffs again, you know what to bet on twice.
I mean, it'd be fitting for Ghent just to slot themselves into the second playoffs like they always do, and then win it, and then try and make their way into Europe that way. Be very Ghent-y. What was I going to say? There was another thing I was going to say off the back of that, but I can't remember. Maybe it was just that one there. Let's go to Erpen against St. Truiden. Erpen hadn't scored for years. No one can remember the last goal scorer. It's a distant memory for fans. You're coming in hope, not expectation, all that sort of stuff. But after 10 minutes, Zion Suzuki says, you know what? Leysen's had a clanger. No one's going to remember my clanger, so I can drop an absolute clanger here and no one's going to really talk about it, so it's fine. He just drops a ball under very little pressure. I think the only pressure he's under is he's got one of his own players next to him. Charles Cook kind of gets in the mix, but the ball falls to Rena Emond. Emond tucks it in quite nicely, actually, on the swivel. Not a bad finish, considering it could have gone anywhere. That makes it 1-0. I message you guys to be like, I can't believe they've scored. It was incredible. And it felt like, despite them not, like, they would allow St. Tune to have the ball, which is unsurprising that St. Tune had the ball. And while St. Tune, especially in the back end of the game, had a lot more chances, a lot more kind of testing of Slonina, if I let open, we're always, well, they weren't dangerous, but they always had opportunities to maybe do something on the counter attack. But it's open, so they can't really do anything on the counter attack. But in the end, they win this game. Slonina has a very decent game. St. Tudor just couldn't score. The fans were chanting for Adriano Bertaccini. Torsten Think said, that's nice. Brought him in after 76 minutes. So it's an interesting one because it feels like he's just not really given him much of a chance. It feels like going to the playoffs and just give the guy game time. Like, let's see, because like there's no one else scoring bags full of goals. Abubakar Okoye has kind of slowed down a lot in recent weeks, so he's not really providing the goals for you. So why not give the striker that you've brought in the chance to kind of find his feet in the Pro League rather than leaving it until the summer? In the end, it's a massive, massive win for Erpen. Absolutely huge. This, and kind of looking at their running as well, like, they, of all the sides, had the best last two games, I guess you could say, because now they've just played St. Tune, have nothing to play for. They've got Standard, who have absolutely nothing to play for. So they have somehow gone from this position of absolute disaster. And I think we said last week, will they ever score again, to somehow being technically one of the informed sides in the bottom four because they were rubbish. And with a great chance of not being in 14th place or whatever. They've moved out the bottom two. They're in kind of third bottom. They could leapfrog Leuven if they beat Standard, and obviously Leuven lose to Mechelen. So it's funny how things change, but don't change, because they still weren't great and they still struggled to actually find the back of the net. But you just have someone in Lemond who, if he could just do stuff like that every now and then, it makes it one of the best free agent signings they've probably ever made.
Well, we're thinking of throwing them a party because we thought they weren't going to score ever again. So the fact they have is reason enough for a party, no matter what happens now. That's their first goal in eight and their first win in eight, funnily enough, as well. Funny with the number eight. The question is, can they grab that kind of playoff spot or arguably even better it now? Bizarre. Never thought I'd be saying that. Ben mentioned Amond. I think they are a slightly better side with him in it. It's just unfortunate that he's been ill for the past few weeks, not related to footballing injuries as well, which is really unfortunate. He had an unfortunate week as well in saying some rather uncomplimentary things about Standard, which he's since apologised about, presumably when he got a torrent of abuse on various forms of social media. Not the smartest thing to do, really, regardless of how you feel about your former employers. That gave me a bit of a laugh this week. Open are alive. And that panda gif that I sent you guys, that panda dancing, I'm just wondering, will I get to use that again next weekend? That's one of my outstanding questions.
Oh God, just for the GIF, I don't hope it's not gonna happen. but regardless of that, looks like, okay, of course, yeah, maybe Scott's formulated it a little bit weird because, yeah, it's certain which playoffs they are going to be playing. And of course, they're not going to better their ticket, but inside those playoffs, they might get their position indeed a bit higher. Maybe Scott mentioned that with a ticket, but I realize only now. But this looks like they might be starting outside of the dreaded bottom two inside those playoffs as well. And indeed, who knows, maybe they even get to the least bad position the best position for starting in that playoffs. One, if you have to start it in, you'd rather start it in that position. But they still will need to grab a win against Standard then next week. First goal in 609 minutes, to be a bit more precise than the, just the years and the eight games, then things that also put it into minutes this time. That's remarkable, I guess. A clean sheet. I mean, the last three wins have been 1-0s as well. Well, they just don't score in general, even if they win. But that's definitely, also still remarkable that they they make the most of out of their goals as well. Like I also mentioned before, they actually don't draw that much. So they out of the play, these teams that end up in the relegation playoffs, they most likely will have the most wins all season as well. But yeah. Sorry for that. My microphone just fell down for a second there. So sorry for the listener. But yeah, Eupen indeed haven't scored twice since October. The stat that Scott has been hiding from everyone, or well, has mentioned once before, I think. But I'll steal it from him here quickly. But yeah. Then for Sint-Truiden, yeah, efficiency was the issue for them. Yes, Eupen also could have scored a bit more, maybe, but Sint-Truiden definitely. Also, Slonina had a good game. I have to give a shout out to him as well to deny them. Not that everything he did was well, it was not all him. Sint-Truiden could have finished better themselves as well. And well, it was already the case before, and this might also be Eupen saving in a way. They really are in no man's land. 7 points behind 8th spot, 6 points, 6 ahead, a 10th spot. Yeah, so they really have nothing to play for anymore outside of some winning bonuses. But yeah, talking about Koita, indeed, he only scored 2 goals since New Year, and that was in the same game as well. And that's a game. It's been more than 6 games as well, so almost as long as Eupen haven't scored. Koita also indeed has a bit of a drought after the AFCON, I guess you could say, as well, to put it that way. Yeah, and that's what Eupen have then the chance to play Standard, which is also a side now a bit into no man's land, so maybe that's still... Teams, I mean, Sint-Truiden won't be happy that they lost, but they're not going to cry over it either, I guess, because they don't really have anything to play for, even though they could have gotten something out of this game against Eupen. Standard might be in the same position for next week. Let's see.
Yeah, and I know there's been talk today as of recording about kind of reducing the league to 14 teams and all this sort of like yada, 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 but the Pro League can, to be fair to itself, look... obviously, depending on how the playoffs go, and so they can say, well, look, we got to the end of the regular season and only 2 teams have absolutely no real reason to play for anything. They could, I guess, for the playoffs that they're going to be in, but there's only 2 sides. Every single game to finish the season has teams that kind of need to win points for certain kind of... There are, like, ramifications for that. So I guess they can kind of say, look, it's achieved a little bit of excitement for that final day or days, as it is going to be spread out over a couple. Before we head off, let's go down to the Challenger Pro League. Obviously, we will be seeing at least 2 of those sides next year in the Pro League, potentially 3. Scott, over to you for this.
Well, we've reached match day 25, so we're approaching the end of the regular season in the Challenger Pro League as well. Scores round up this weekend. Beerschot beat Lierse 2-1 to go back top. Pat Drysdon and Jong Genk finished 2 each. SL16 lost 2-1 at home to Club Next. Dender beat Oostende 1-0. Sarang lost 2-1 at home to Beveren. Anderlecht Futures lost 1-0 to Zulte Waregem. Frank Baran lost 2-1 to Lommel. And RFC Liège beat Inform Denza 1-0 in one of the slight surprises of the weekend. What does all of this mean for the state of play? Well, Beerschot returned to the top because Denza dropped points. Denza stay in second. That was actually their first defeat in 9. So good has their form been for a while now. Lommel are up to 3rd now, only a point off an automatic promotion spot at the moment. SL16 and Sarang remain in the drop zone. A couple of other bits of news from the CPL kind of worth highlighting, I think, this week are Oostende were given an extension to make some still outstanding payments. That extension has been granted until March the 18th. If those payments are not made, they face a further points reduction. They were given that extension because the administrator thinks he's making some progress with a potential buyer. So we'll see what happens there over the next week, 10 days. And the other bit of news I thought was interesting was we saw the return of a certain Zeno Gano for Zlatan Varagam this weekend. His first appearance since the end of November. He played 30 minutes. He's got together, knocked heads with Vincent Everard. They've put their differences aside in the spirit of trying to achieve automatic promotion, because as we know, in recent weeks, the wheels have been coming off that a little bit for Zlatan. So it's good to see him back, because he was scoring goals for fun before AFCON and the falling out there at the club.
Yeah, another thing to mention is, of course, that the derby between Patro Eze and Jong Genk, well, became a little bit too heated. I think now both fan bases are under that new law that with them away games ban. There were strange scenes going on after the Patro Eze had scored their first goal. Things went berserk, I guess. And yeah, okay, people started hitting each other. I guess it's called a fight.
Don't be racist, people, and then you know there's no need for a fight.
Well, no, I think that first word I'm actually not going to use, because yes, it has been on the speakers, but I didn't hear anything out for that. I think it was more like a smoke screen, because other things that are not supposed to happen happening.
Nobody really knows the truth, to
get even more people, well, towards what the actual reason was, because they could just go help their fellow fans as well, I guess, to not involve even more people in that fight. But yeah. Regardless of, maybe there was, of course, I'm not denying anything either, if there was, but like there's not really been anything, since nothing has come out of that afterwards, and it was just about the fight scene itself. I think that probably was the main reason. Shameful, I guess, anyway. But yeah, reminding us of our long lost derby in Belgian football, though. So that even if it's, of course, not between the two senior sides, but definitely some that makes it even more ridiculous, I guess. That's, yeah,
100%. So weird, like going to your youth team's game and then having a fight. So weird. Before we head off now, I was just gonna say I feel like I cursed Denza last week by saying they're like the only team that actually cares or has a chance of getting promoted because they're in form. And I think now looking at it, you're kind of, I don't want to write Denza off, but you feel like that top four should be the ones battling it out. And then 8-5 is battling out for the playoffs. Like, it is getting quite tense there. At the bottom, from, I guess, SL16 up to, well, maybe from Selang up to Bully Franks Brands, those kind of four sides battling out to avoid that final relegation spot. So, yeah, all to play for in the CPL. But hopefully next week's no more fighting, just football. That'd be nice, because it's completely unnecessary and just bizarre. That about does it for this week's episode. As always, guys, it's been a pleasure chatting all things Belgian football with you.
It has, hasn't it? And have a lovely week, everyone, whatever you're up to, and enjoy the final round of regular fixtures before the playoffs. They're sure to have us on the edge of our seats, hopefully right until the very end.
Yeah, depending on scenarios, I'm not sure if I want to have it until the very end, but it's already long enough, but definitely going to enjoy them as much as I can, and hopefully you do as well.
Absolutely, and hopefully we'll get some unexpected good results in Europe as well from Union and Club Brugge, so good luck to those two as well. As always, if you enjoy listening to this podcast, leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. If you like it even more than that, or you've already done that, why not consider donating to us at Buy Me a Coffee? You can find that link on our socials.
Please do, so that I can fix my microphone stand. There's another reason to do it.
If you've not enjoyed hearing Joris's microphone drop twice during this recording, then that is all the more reason to do that. Fit him out with a nice, shiny microphone. That'd be very, very good. If you have any questions after next weekend's fixtures, please do let us know. We didn't run a question one for this one, but we will next week, because obviously there'll be a lot more ramifications for what has happened at the end of the regular season. Yeah, as always, thank you very much for listening, and we'll speak to you soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.